Well, I really am excited for you guys to be here tonight. My name is Rob Shepherd. I'm the lead pastor at Next Level Church. And tonight we're kicking off a brand new series called Light, Camera, Love. And I don't know if you guys can smell that. Do you smell that? Just humor me for a second. On the count of three, would everyone just take a deep sniff? One, two, three. That is the smell of Twitterpation. Twitterpation is an amazing smell, and it goes into hibernation through some of the winter months, but then it comes out of hiding around about the second week of February, and it just hits people, oftentimes unsuspecting people. It hits them with like a vengeance, and you have nothing to fight against it because Twitterpation is a powerful thing, and you guys are looking at me like you don't know about Twitterpation. So luckily for you, I have a clip from a documentary that shares what exactly Twitterpation is. Check this out.
Well, what's the matter with them?
Why are they acting that way?
Why, don't you know? They're Twitterpated.
Twitterpated?
Yes. Nearly everybody gets Twitterpated in the springtime. For example, you're walking along, minding your own business. You're looking neither to the left nor to the right, when all of a sudden, you run smack into a pretty face. You begin to get weak in the knees. Your head's in a whirl. And then you feel light as a feather. And before you know it, you're walking on air. And then you know what? You're not for a loop. And you completely lose your head.
Gosh. That's awful.
Gee whiz, terrible.
And that ain't all. It can happen to anybody. So you'd better be careful. It could happen to you, and you, and... Yes, it could even happen to you.
Well, it's not gonna happen to me.
Me neither. Me neither.
That's Twitterpation. It hits you oftentimes around the springtime, and you don't see it coming. And I bet there was a time in your life where you said, it's not going to happen to me. Boys have cooties. Girls are crazy. You probably said you would never fall to it, but then something happens, and all of a sudden you feel Twitterpated. Maybe, though, you've never defined it as Twitterpation. I absolutely love the way Mel Gibson's character Jerry says it in Conspiracy Theory. Jerry's a taxi cab driver, and he explains to one of his passengers, he says, love gives you wings. It makes you fly. I don't even call it love. I call it Geronimo. The passenger says, Geronimo? Jerry says, yeah, Geronimo. See, when you're in love, you'll jump off the Empire State and you won't care, screaming Geronimo all the way down. It's great. The passenger says, yeah, but then you'll die. You'll squish yourself. So what's the point? Jerry says, hey, aren't you listening? I'm telling you, man, love gives you wings. I love that. And if you're here tonight and maybe you don't call it Twitterpation, maybe you call it Geronimo, or maybe you call it love, we love the feelings and emotions of love. We absolutely love it. The problem is that the emotion and feeling of love doesn't come with a handbook. I don't know about you, but I wasn't handed a book when I first started dating that said, hey, this is what you should do and this is what you should not do. And what happens is a lot of times we get into Twitterpation and we start making all sorts of mistakes, which leads to frustration, and then that leads to constipation, so then we end up breaking up, and that leads to isolation. And when we're in isolation, all we want to do is get back to Twitterpation. We just say, oh, I missed it so bad, but when we're in the Twitterpation, it's like awful, and it's like, oh, this is, why are relationships so tough? I can't stand this. And then it ends, and you're like, that's all I want. I just want a relationship. We're going to see this coming up this week on February 14th is Thursday. Just want to give you a heads up, men. If you've forgotten about it, it's kind of an important holiday for some women. So make sure you do something about it. But listen, if you're here today and you are single, there's a great chance that at some point on February 14th, you're going to go to your Facebook page and you're going to start giving some bitter diatribe about how you hate all this mushy nut stuff and like, can't people just keep it to themselves? And I want to tell you, don't be a bitter single person, because one day it's going to happen to you. One day Twitter patient is going to come out of nowhere and it's going to hit you, and then you're going to fill your Facebook pages with enough mush to fill the Grand Canyon. I promise you it'll happen. So do not be a bitter single person and hate on all the mushy people that are happily together. You guys do that? Can you agree with that? Okay. All right. Well, here's the thing. With Twitter patient, no one just hands out and says, hey, this is what you should do and this is what you shouldn't do. And so most of us learn from the mistakes that we made. And I know that I made a lot of mistakes in my early relationship with Monica, who is now my wife. I remember on our very first date, we didn't have a lot of money. In fact, we were so poor we couldn't pay attention. And so a lot of our dates were just fun things that didn't cost any money. And our very first date, we decided to go for a walk around her campus. And we're walking, and it was a beautiful fall night. It was the end of October, early November. It was an amazing night. And as we were walking, we came upon this park. And it was a kid's park, but like, there's just something like magical about it. Like, we could just feel the Twitter patient in the air. So we ran into this park, and we saw a swing set. And we get on the swings, and we start swinging with one another. And it was just the perfect romantic night. The stars were shining bright just for us. The moon was smiling down in approval. If you were there, you would have heard the animals, because the animals were singing a song over us. It was magical. We could feel the love. If you know it, sing along. The words are on the screen. You need to get yourself in that moment to see what we were experiencing. Go ahead. Don't be shy. Sing it along. I know you know the words. If you're not into singing, you can sway. Here it comes. It's coming. Can you feel it? I love how the echo's in parentheses. Oh, this is a great line right here. Wait for it. All right, now that we're all there, you know what we were going through. And I know it was love, because that night I felt like a king. And I don't know what a vagabond is, but I'm assuming Monica felt like a vagabond, because we could feel the love. We could feel it. It was an amazing, like it was just, it was in the air. And after swinging for a little while, I saw something that I hadn't seen since I was a little kid. It was a merry-go-round. And I'm pretty sure that merry-go-rounds are now illegal in America, because they're not in kids' parks, but this one still had one. And so I jumped off of the swing and I led Monica to the merry-go-round. And when we got to the merry-go-round, we both got on it. And so there's it's like a cylinder circle-like thing, and you stand on it and you hold on to the bars. And so one foot was on the merry-go-round and one foot was on the ground. And we were doing this motion to push ourselves in a circle. But after a couple laps, we realized that it wasn't a very fun ride for adults. It's the kind of thing that is built for people that weigh 50 pounds or less. And so we were barely moving on this thing. So I came up with the bright idea. Why don't I push Monica on the merry-go-round to create a fun experience? Because I remember being a kid. I don't know if you remember this, but like when you're a kid on a merry-go-round, you have to hold on for dear life. Like, you feel like your feet are going to come out from underneath you, and like, you're gripping that bar. We weren't experiencing that. And so I hop off, and I start pushing Monica on the merry-go-round. And I noticed that when I pushed it pretty hard, she kind of did this motion. Whoa. And something inside me thought this was kind of funny. And so I took both hands and I started pushing on the merry-go-round as hard as I could. And Monica at this point is now flying, and she's doing circle after circle when she yells out, "Rob, I'm going to be sick." Now, the normal person would stop at this point, but there's something you need to know about me. I don't have an off switch, and so when I think something's funny, I take it to the farthest degree. And so when she said she thinks she was going to be sick, I put that thing in turbo and just started spinning it as hard as I could, and she's flying around it, and then finally she just gets to that point. You know, like, have you ever been spoken to by a woman where you just know there's no more, like, playing, like, this is, like, her serious voice, and she was like, "Rob, stop now, I'm going to be sick." And so I knew she wasn't playing anymore, and I stopped the merry-go-round. I asked her if she was doing okay. She said she was doing fine. And so we sit on the edge of the merry-go-round. And once again, the animals start singing, "Can You Feel the Love Tonight?" And the stars are beaming brightly. And we lock eyes, and it was like a tractor beam. Shoo! I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew it was going to be magical. We're staring into one another's eyes, and then all of a sudden, Monica breaks gaze, and she looks down on the ground, and she lets out this, "Whoa!" She pukes all at our feet. Now, I've never thrown up before, and so I don't know that after you throw up, you might need a napkin or a Tic Tac or something. I didn't want to lose sight of this moment because I could feel the love that night. And so my idea was, instead of going home, my idea was just to shuffle our feet on the merry-go-round to the other side so that we didn't have to see or smell the throw-up. And so we shuffled our feet in a circle and came to the other side and got to the other side. And once again, my eyes locked with her eyes. It was like a tractor beam. I don't know why she was going along with it. I guess she felt the love that night. But I was looking into her eyes. I didn't know what was about to happen, but I knew it was magical. And all of a sudden, Monica breaks gaze, and she looks down at the ground and says, "Whoa!" and throws up everywhere. Twice. Not once, but twice. That was our first date. Now, you would think that that would be enough to scare off a girl, but for some reason, she wanted to continue to date me. And so for the next 2 weeks, we went on a couple of dates, and we hung out a lot, and things were going great. We loved each other's company. We had a lot of fun. We were getting to know one another. She loved God. That's what I was looking for in a future spouse. So everything looked like it was perfect on paper, except there was one huge problem. I wasn't feeling it. You see, I had been told by married people that when you find the one, like there's only one for you, and when you find that one, you're just going to know. Like you're going to, something inside of you is just going to tell you, you're going to know. You're going to have like this sixth sense. It's just like, this is the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. You're just going to know. And so I thought, I don't know. And after 2 weeks, instead of seeing where this relationship should go, I was just saying to myself, I don't have that feeling. Like, I don't know when it's supposed to come, but, like, it should be here by now. It's been 2 whole weeks. Because I didn't feel that feeling, I called the relationship off. Because I had said that I don't want to date someone just to date. I want to date someone with the purpose of finding out if they're going to be my spouse. And so I didn't want to hurt her heart. I wanted to guard her heart. And so after 2 whole weeks, I broke up with her. Now, thankfully, our God is a God that's full of grace and second chances. And thankfully, Monica loves God because she gave me a second chance about a year later. And this time, I didn't make the stupid decision of breaking up with her. This time, I asked her to marry me. And we've been married for 11 and a half years. And I want to say it's happily ever after. But I wish, in that early dating stage, that first time that we dated, I wish that someone would have come out and defined to me what love was. Because in my world, love was just a feeling. It was just an emotion. And if I didn't feel it, that meant that it must not be love. Tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to get past the feelings, because love is not a feeling. Love is not an emotion. Love is something more than that. And we're going to look at what the Bible has to say about love. And my hope is that the definition of love from the Bible will radically change every single person in here. I hope that if you're married, and even if you're a newlywed, and you're still mushy and like in that honeymoon period, I hope it radically changes you. If you're an old fart married couple and you don't even like celebrating anything romantic, I hope that you're challenged by this talk. If you're single, this talk is for you, because this is going to give us the Bible's definition of what love is. And when we accept that, it will radically change all of our relationships. I want to give you a little bit of context to understand who we're talking about. This book that we're about to read, a section of it, is from a guy by the name of John. And John was one of Jesus' 12 disciples. Now, specifically, it says about John that John was the one whom Jesus loved. So when John talks about love, he's not talking about something he heard in a sermon or he heard someone else talk about. He's talking about it firsthand. He experienced the love of God through Jesus. So it's really important for us to understand what John has to say about love. Let's dive in understanding that to see what John says. John says, "Dear friends, let us love one another. For love comes from," what's that word? God. One more time on the count of three. One, two, three. God. "Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love." Let's just stop there just for a second. Every single one of us in here has experienced love in some degree. Love is a natural feeling that we have. It is a gift of God. And because human beings are created in the image of God, we all have a desire to be loved and a desire to show love. If you're a parent, you relate to this. Nobody could teach you that feeling that you would have the very first time you saw your first kid. You just have this feeling. It's just love. And if you're married, you know that feeling. Like, no one, like, taught you. Like, one day it's going to hit you. You just knew. It was like, okay, this relationship is starting. I think something is happening. The problem is, though, that even though we know a kind of version of love, unless we know God, the love that we give and the love that we receive is a perverted version of love. And most of us, what we've done with love is we've based it off of what someone else can do for us. We've said that love is an emotion. It's a feeling. And so if somebody meets my needs, if someone is nice to me, if somebody gives me something, then I'm going to love them. But the second they don't meet my needs, the feeling is gone and we break things off. But that's not the type of love that comes from God. God says, John says that God is love. And everyone that knows God knows love. So here's the thing. If you're in a marriage relationship and you do not feel love, it is a direct relationship to how much you know God. Because if you know God, you're going to know love. I love what Jesus has to say about love. And it's no doubt that John was sitting there when he heard Jesus preach this sermon. I love the way that the Message paraphrase of the Bible puts the sermon that Jesus gave. Look at it with me. He says, "You're familiar with the old written law. Love your friend and its unwritten companion. Hate your enemy." Now, Jesus is referencing a couple things here. There's the old written law, the thing that's in the Old Testament, the thing that's written down that says, you know, love your neighbor. But then there's the unwritten law. And in their day, they had all these extra religious rules, all these things that you just had to do. Like, I don't know if you grew up in a traditional church, but like an additional rule was like you can't wear a hat in church. Did you ever grow up in a church like that? Like, I didn't know that you couldn't wear hats in church, but I remember the very first time I made that mistake, I was running down the halls of the First Baptist Church that I'd ever been in, and I was wearing a ball cap, and some old lady that I'd never seen before grabs me by the arm and tells me that I'm being a pagan because I'm wearing a hat in the house of God. And I was like, I don't even know you. I don't even know what that means. Can I sue you? Like, this is rough. Like, she was literally grabbed my arm and fussed at me for wearing a hat. And like, I've never seen in the Bible that guys can't wear hats when they're in the hallway of a church. It's like these extra rules. And in Jesus' day, they had these extra rules. And the extra rule, it said, hey, if someone is your enemy, you can hate them. And so Jesus says, hey, you've heard the familiar rule and you've heard the unwritten rule. I'm going to destroy both of those. Look what he says next. He says, I'm challenging that. I'm telling you to love your enemies. Let them bring out the best in you, not the worst. When someone gives you a hard time, respond with the energies of prayer. For then you are working out of your true selves, your God-created selves. This is what God does. He gives the best to sun to warm and the rain to nourish to everyone, regardless of the good and bad, the nice and nasty. If all you do is love the lovable, do you expect a bonus? Anybody can do that. If you simply say hello to those who greet you, you expect a medal. Any run-of-the-mill sinner does that. I love the way that the Message paraphrases this. Jesus is saying, hey, you want a reward for loving people that are nice to you? Like, what reward is that? Even pagans, even those who do not have a relationship with God, give love that way. That's love based off of a feeling or based off an emotion. Our marriage relationship will work as long as you meet my needs. But the second you don't meet my needs, I'm calling this thing off. Our dating relationship, it'll work as long as you fit my checklist and you meet my needs, and then it's going to go well. That friendship's going to go great as long as you meet my needs and you love me. But the second you don't love me the way that I need to be loved, I'm calling things off. And Jesus is saying, this can't be. If you are a Christian, if you've ever experienced God's love, you can't love people just because they do nice stuff for you. That's what everyone else does. But Christians are called to a higher standard. We're not called to love as an emotion or as a feeling. We're called to love even the unlovable. Because what did it say that Jesus and that God does? God sends the rain on the wicked and the kind. God blesses those that don't love him and those that do. And so because God does that, that's our example of what love is. So John's then going to kind of start challenging us in on that theme. Let's keep reading. It says, this is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. There is so much amazing stuff packed in those few verses. We could spend the rest of the night just talking about it, but I absolutely love what John does here. John says, you know what? God is love. I've already told you that, so let me build on this. You want to know how we know that God is love? Because God sent his son to die for you. That's how we know that God is love. I don't know if we have any 80s fans of music, but if you were in the 80s and you were a fan of the one-hit wonder Foreigner, you might remember the song where he sang, I want to know what love is. I want you to show me. Well, if he read this verse, he would have not have been a one-hit wonder because I want to know what love is. What is love? God is love. You want him to show me? God does. Bam. What does he do? He sends his son to die for us. That's love. That's the definition of love. And here's the thing. You need to let this sink in. God did not send his son to die for good people. He sent his son to die for dead people, for sinners, for those that turn their back on God. That is love. God is love. And what did he do? He looked down at the human race and he says, even though you don't want anything to do with me, even though you're turning your back on me, even though you don't want to have a relationship with me, I'm going to love you. That's love. God is love. And he loved us when we were at our worst. Like, it wasn't like God looked down at you and said, you know what? You're a pretty good person, so I'm going to send my son. No, it was our sin. It was my sin. And it was your sin that Jesus died for. So that's the kind of God that we serve. So when John says God is love, we can know exactly what he means by that. What does he mean? He means that God loved us not the way that we wanted to be loved, but the way that we needed to be loved. And specifically what he did is he sent his son to die for our sins. That is an amazing picture of what love is. John then goes and he flips a script. He's given us this definition of what love is, and he's given us the perfect example, but then he makes it personal, and he tells us what we're supposed to do. Look at what he says next. He says, dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. I love how John spins this. He says, dear friends, since God so loved us, we then ought to love one another. But then he gives the point. The reason this is so important is because nobody's ever seen God. Nobody's ever seen him. No one in the Bible has ever seen God's face or know exactly what God looks like. Like, nobody's seen him. And John is making this point here that the way that people see God, it's not by God appearing to them in a dream or God appearing to them in a cloud or God like appearing to them. The way that people see God is by our love. Love is the telescope to allow people to see God. Now, I don't know if we have any NASA people or science freaks or people who just love gazing at the stars, but I love being able to know that there's so much more going out there than what we can see with the naked eye. Like, if you have a telescope, a very powerful telescope, you can actually see that there are, like, planets and other things going on out there. Without that telescope, we would never know that any of those things existed. Without a telescope, we wouldn't know that Saturn was real. And without a powerful telescope, we wouldn't know that Saturn is actually God's favorite planet. The reason we know that God's favorite planet is Saturn is because he liked it, so he put a ring on it. Whoa, oh, 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 oh. Ba-dum-ching. I'll be here all night. God puts this amazing ring on Saturn. Now, we don't know this because we can look up into the sky tonight and say, oh, look, there's a ring. With the naked eye, you'll never be able to see Saturn. But through a powerful telescope, you can see that Saturn is real and that it has these yellow, like hazy rings circling around it. And we can know tons of details about Saturn because we can see it through a telescope. And someone could come up to me and say, you know what, Rob, I don't believe in Saturn. It's not real. I've never seen it. I look outside at night all the time, and I've never seen a planet with a ring around it. And if someone said that to me, I could say, hold on, okay, let's go find a powerful telescope. We can find it. We can actually see it, and I can show you these rings. The telescope is proof that Saturn exists and that it has rings around it. And John is saying that your love is the telescope to God. It is proof that God exists. If someone comes up to you and says, I don't believe in God because I haven't seen it, our response is, hey, watch my love. You want to see God? Watch the way that I love people. God will show up. Now, when we don't love, like I bet some of you have experienced this. I experience this on a regular basis where I meet with someone and someone will tell me, I used to believe in God, but I no longer believe because I had a bad experience at church. I've met with people who say things to me like, I used to have a great relationship with God until the youth pastor molested me. and now I no longer believe in God. Or I met with people who said, I used to have a great relationship with God until the church I was going to started fighting with one another. And because they couldn't get along, I no longer believe in God. Why? Why does people's behaviors affect our relationship with God so much? It's because our love is a telescope to God. So when we are not loving one another, we are closing the eyes. We are making God disappear. Our love for one another, it is the thing. It is proof that God exists. And here's the deal. If you are here tonight and you are married, your love for your spouse, it's a really, really big deal. And it's not just a big deal because God's commanded you to love your spouse like he loves the church. It's a really, really big deal because your relationship should point people to Jesus. And in your marriage relationship, if you don't get along, if you don't submit to one another, if you don't love each other well, then it's going to put a horrible picture on what God's love is for us. If you're single tonight, you say, well, this may not apply to me. Yes, it does. Because if you're single tonight, you have some time to practice love. Most of us practice love very selfishly, and then we got into a marriage relationship and we thought things would change, but it doesn't change. If you're single, start practicing God-type love now. Practice on your parents. Some parents are hard to love. You learn to love them. You'll learn to love your spouse. You start loving the way that God loves you, and it changes every relationship. It changes everything. Because no longer do I look at someone and just say, hey, what can you give me? What can you do for me? How can you meet my need? I meet with singles who will tell me, that they'll ask this question, like how far is too far in a relationship? And what line should we cross or what line should we not cross? And I think that the heart of that question really comes from a misunderstanding of what love is. Because love without God says, hey, I'm going to go to a human being and I'm going to get everything I can out of them. I'm just going to suck them dry. And then when they no longer meet my needs, I'm going to just break things off. But love in a godly way says, hey, you know what? We might have to wait. We're going to have to wait to cross lines and to experiment and to try things. We're going to have to wait for marriage. And it's not because God is mean. It's because God has a plan. He's trying to protect our hearts. And so because I love you, even though it's going to be really hard because I'm really attracted to you, because I love you, I'm not going to love you with a selfish love that just gets whatever I can out of this relationship. I'm going to love you with the type of love that God gave me, which means I'm going to put you first. Imagine how different relationships would be if dating relationships went into it, treating love as something opposite than a feeling. It would translate into amazing marriages. And imagine how different marriages would be if both married people said, hey, you know what? We're going to love each other the way that God loves us. And imagine how different families would be. Because that cute little baby that you first saw in the hospital that you felt so much love for, you don't feel so much love when they're disobeying you. But what happens if you started loving your kids like God loved you and you said, hey, no matter what you did, no matter what you do, my love for you is not contingent on you obeying me. It's not contingent on you being a good kid. My love for you is just love. I love you, period. You can't do anything to earn my love. If we love like God loved us, it would radically change every relationship that we have. Well, John goes on to conclude this section, and I love what he does here at the end. He says, we love because he first loved us. If anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he is a liar. For anyone who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And he has given us this command, whoever loves God must also love his brother. I want us to read that very first line again. It says, we love because he first loved us. That's the main idea of this talk. And if you want some application for tonight, here's what I would like you to do. We gave you some notes. They were in your seat. Write down this phrase. Maybe you don't want to write down notes. Open up your phone to the notes section and write this in there. Write it someplace where you can put it so you can see it this week. Because this week I want you to be thinking about that line. We love because he first loved us. I want us memorizing that. I want us talking about that. I want us thinking about that. And this week when you make a mistake, when you do something that you know you shouldn't do, I want you to reflect on, hey, God loved me first. And God didn't love me because I was good enough or smart enough. Or because people liked me. God loved me because he loved me, even when I was at my worst. We love because he first loved us. He goes on to talk about if you struggle to love somebody that you can't see or that you can see, How in the world can you say that you love God who you can't see? If we struggle to love people, and don't we all struggle to love people? There are people that just get on my last nerve. There are people who it's just like, I can't stand you. But if I can't love them through their worst, it's a great reflection that I don't know God's love. How do we know God's love? Well, God sent His Son to die for us, even when we were at our worst. God loved us first. And because God loved us first, it changes the way that we love other people. So you want to know what love is? It's not in a relationship with a human being. It's in a relationship with God. And the more that you get to know God, the more that you'll learn to love your relationships. Will you pray with me? God, thank you so much for the gift of love. God, thank you that even though we're imperfect, you came and you died for us. And you love us, and you have a plan for us. And God, I just ask that you would convict us right now. God, I ask that you would help us to love you, not just out of selfish motives, but because of something we've received. We've received your love. And God, I ask that you would use that to change our lives. Help us to go out of here and love others well. Help us to love our spouses well. Help us to love our friends well. Help us to love our families well. God, we just ask that you would help us to love so that it's a reflection to the world of how you love us. Thank you so much for what you're doing and what you're going to do in our hearts. Stir us to you. In Jesus' name, amen.